That's out.
Oh, he's dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
England have beaten South Africa in the first game of the World Cup in 2019 thanks to a Ben Stokes masterclass. We'll talk about that catch before asking what on earth has happened to South Africa. Will McPherson will be joining us from the UK, from the Evening Standard, to give us the UK view. We'll talk Prince Harry, Gareth Southgate, preview Australia's first match against Afghanistan, all before we answer your questions using the hashtag AskTGC. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. Pez, good morning to you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever anyone is around the world tuning into this World Cup supplementary cast, I guess. So let's just set the scene here, guys. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were in some plush Fox Sports studio podcast arenas, which are now kind of hosting podcast TV shows.
Yep.
You're under a doona at the moment in Sydney. And
yes.
Just to cancel out the echo, and I'm in a car.
Yep.
So as to not wake my sleeping child and for him not to destroy the cast like the Gillespie cast. RIP that cast indeed.
Yes, we've
But nevertheless, regressed. You know, this is what we do. For our listeners, we've watched the game, or at least the first innings. We caught up with some replays, highlights afterwards, and we can tell you, you know, if you're an Australian on your commute in the morning, what happened with this World Cup match, with this World Cup opener. There's been a lot of mythologizing about England and how good they are. Happy to report, not really, that, yeah, they were rusty and won by 100 runs. Really. You know, they for those who sort of started watching the match, they would have seen that England sort of struggled to get away from South Africa, or at least that's what the commentators were saying, and yet they were still always at six and over. I just kept looking at the score going, I'd be really happy with this if this was Australia. Really happy. All their top-order batsmen seemed to fire, apart from Bairstow, got a first baller. Joss Butler came in at the end and couldn't get going, but that will happen. Stokes, 89 off 79. Owen Morgan looked fantastic. Jason Roy, scratchy, still went over 100. Joe Root looked really solid. Yeah, they look good. They cobbled together 311, he goes, put it that way. They scraped it together.
They did, Pez, that's right. I saw a tweet last night from a UK journalist who reported that England apparently weren't very happy with the amount of grass coverage on the wicket, which is funny to me because they've obviously just turned into Australia. Let's just make these wickets just fucking flat. We need to score 500. That's been their whole pursuit for this World Cup. I think like winning it is supplementary to scoring 500 in an innings. That's basically what they want to do. You rightfully say everyone got going. I love these like the stats just come out in cricket just, you know, after someone passes a, you know, seemingly anonymous milestone, but like I'm looking now. Owen Morgan averages 75 or something this year. There's just runs everywhere in the team. I asked on the last podcast like what a Coulter Nile does. I'm not really sure what a Plunkett does, other than just like fill an 11. But you know, he's picked up a couple of wickets. You know, he's got some lower order runs in him. And I think you can get away with it a bit more when you've got the batting power that England have. It's just a really well balanced team, Pez. You rightfully say they probably played at 80%. And they've just absolutely smashed South Africa. I couldn't really figure out what was going on with South Africa, just to take away some of the spotlight away from England, because, you know, I'm wary of awarding the World Cup after the first game. But South Africa, to me, I can't quite figure it out because they've got quite a good team on paper, but it's all a bit nothing. Like, it's an aging team. But fuck, they've got to hide some blokes in the field. It's one of the worst fielding South African teams I think I've ever seen. Like, Amla literally cannot throw the ball. Nasser Hussain on commentary last night was talking about how he's lost his arm. So we have to hide him in the field. He cannot field. They've obviously got Tahir, got to hide him as well. Ngidi, not a great athlete around the field. It's just, they're not great South Africa, but no one's tipping them to do anything, to be fair.
It's funny no one's tipping them to do anything either. I still think that's all relative to England. I mean, it was only 6 months ago that they came out to Australia and walloped us, you know, at our cricket.
True.
So, yeah, it, you know, it's a long tournament, blah, 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 cliche. I just back to England's batting, here goes. As I was watching South Africa go about their business, I thought they have to keep taking wickets, these guys, because as soon as the next England batsman comes in, they just start in sixth gear, essentially. I know Stokes started a little bit slower but ended up catching up. He had the more traditional route, ending up with 89 off 79. But you've got to keep taking wickets, otherwise someone else is just going to keep getting the runs. So, you know, it's hard to see how England has stopped. Just early impressions of the World Cup as well. I mean, that White Dukes ball, a lot of the commentators were saying there's not a lot of swing there. The outfields are obviously going to be lightning. Look, the oval wicket offered a little bit, but you're right about the pursuit of 500. It's like England are in an arms race with no one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like first man on the moon as well. You know, who can get there? Who can get to 500?
Yeah.
So, then on the bowling, sorry, he goes, Jofra, you know, he's quick. He's quick. He's got steepling bounce. Mm. And I feel like watching him last night, or at least watching the replay, not the entire replay, this morning, he's sort of reserved a bit. He's reserved a bit for the last couple of years. Mm. He really hurried up Amlar when he ended up lidding him. same with Du Plessis, same with de Kock, and they just strangled England as well. You know, you thought that 311 they cobbled together might have been a function of the wicket. I don't know. England looked complete to me.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was going to touch on there, Pez. Really interesting in terms of just like, you know, there's a lot of chat about often in media, like just teams don't want it enough. You know, like teams who are underperforming, they always get criticised for who's out there and really wants it, you know. Hmm. And I'm thinking specifically, like I was listening to a podcast, I think it was Lee Dixon actually, a former Arsenal player, was talking about the Europa League final, and he was talking about the Arsenal players just didn't look like they were interested. And it's like, no, just always the best team wins in sport. That's what happens. Like the great Australian cricket team just win because they had the best players. The All Blacks win every game because consistently they are the best rugby players in the field. Chelsea won the Europa League final because they had the best players. And England will win the World Cup because they have the best players. You know, and I was kind of watching South Africa batting and I was like, fuck, there's some pretty grim shots being played. Like a lot of caught in the outfield, you know, Faf caught hooking. Like just you're sort of made to look bad. You're made to look like you've played a weak shot, but that's because the other team are just better than you, and they're forcing you to make you look bad. And that's what the Great Australian team did for so many years. And that's what I'm seeing.
Comes
the
back
same
to the
thing.
Great Australian teams.
Well, exactly, and the Great Australian times, and the Great Australian dream of owning a house. He said,
and
how
era nationalism. Relaxed and comfortable.
And that's what it always comes back to, Pez. It always comes back to Howard nationalism.
And an aspiring middle power in the Asian century. Sorry, I'm just trying to fill in Dave's role here on the show. But, I think a lot of club cricketers who listen to this show would be familiar with the idea of chasing down a total that you know you're not going to get. And while you might sort of put together a proud score or a score that might be good for your own standards, you're never really in reach, though, are you? You might be going at 4.5 and over, 5 and over, but you're chasing 6 and over and you're still going, well, you know, if we're batting first, we'd be going really well, but we're just not there. And then as soon as you fall away, as soon as you sort of lose that pivotal wicket, everyone just kind of, it's not a collapse, it's more of a kind of just a gradual melting of the team. Oh, we're going to lose anyway. It kind of had that feel to it, and then England ended up winning by 100 runs. Mm. So,
wasn't there some great quote? I think it was from Justin Langer. No, it was Brad Haddin telling the story, but he was saying that it was when Australia got knocked over cheaply, and Langer was saying, you know, come on, guys, we just got to want it. And then Haddin said, well, that's great, mate, but I don't know how to play the seaming ball or something. And that's like, you know, I've bastardised that quote and butchered it massively, but you understand the point. England just, I mean, the people on the, you know, finishing their finishing our Thursday night in the UK, listening to this podcast with glee, just listening to two blokes, one in the car park, one underneath a doona in Australia, just absolutely falling to pieces because England is just, I mean, a lot of teams playing against England will just be hoping for proud scores. You know, we can do ourselves no harm. We're really proud of ourselves there by losing by 100 runs.
We went at 5.5 and over. We hit 250, 260, a couple of 50s in there. And gee, isn't Jofra good? No one wants to face him. Yeah, just on that quote you were saying before, hell of an article that whoever wrote that. Let's catch up. He goes with a guy that was at the ground at the Oval. We're going to talk to Will McPherson from the Evening Standard right after this.
That is very good.
Thanks champ.
Oh no, you called me champ. We champ.
The Great Cricketer is bringing their live show to the UK for the Ashes. Join Pez, Dave and Higos as they explore the A to Z of cricket. From club to country, from champ to chop king. With shows in Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester and London, The Great Cricketer Live promises to tackle cricket's deeper questions, like why do we inflict this game on ourselves? What does work hard really mean? Will a tight chest and enormous pipes push me up a grade? And why is my father's approval so pivotal to my happiness? With special guests in each city, the shows will provide the perfect tonic to England's impending World Cup win and Ashes triumph. Head to thegradecricketalive.co.uk for details.
I just want to set the scene a little bit here. For those who catch the underground, you'll understand that when you go into the station, many people will be offering the London Evening Standard paper. It's the free paper. It's a little bit more credible than, say, the old MX in Australia. And when you sit down or stand, depending upon how busy the train is, you'll often see this man's mug because he often has back page stories as cricket correspondent for the Evening Standard. I'm talking about Will McPherson, who was at the Oval today. Will, he broadcasts to us from a pub just outside the Oval. How are you, mate?
Cheers, Paz. I'm just outside a doghouse in Kennington, which is one of the all-time great pubs, so it's a pleasure to be on the cast.
No, you're very welcome, mate. We just wanted to get a sense. I mean, he goes, he's under a doona. I'm sitting in a car in Melbourne at 6 a.m. in the morning. You were actually there. How was it at the Oval today?
Yeah, it was good, actually. I mean, yesterday I was at the opening ceremony just outside Buckingham Palace and it pissed it down. So it was one of those ones where you're wondering whether the World Cup is going to go full England on you, basically. And you're thinking, oh, my God, it's 1999 all over again. The weather's terrible. The team are going to be even worse. And then, actually, England put in a really clinical performance today and thrashed Africa. So I think it's 104 runs in it. So they, I think there was a little bit of relief around England today because, obviously, that team, they've won a lot of bilateral series, but turn up a World Cup and everything changes a little bit, and they actually played really well. So a pleasing start and a bit of relief, as I say. The tournament's underway and England didn't lose is the key takeaway today.
Well, that's really interesting that relief was the overriding emotion, given that you've won
the game.
Yeah,
but it's England, isn't it,
Higos? Yeah, I suppose that's right. But, I mean, you are just a really, really good ODI team and a good team in general. You've won the game by 100 runs. I mean, did you think – what was the overall feeling in the grounds, you know, at the turn of the innings after England went past 300? Did you think it was enough? Did you think it was going to be competitive?
Yeah, England make no mistake about the fact that they'd much prefer to chase. So when they lost the toss and were stuck in, and then South Africa sprung a bit of a surprise, great stuff from Faf. He gave Imran Tahir the first over, and he actually said in a press conference after that he'd been planning that for a year, which I thought was an unbelievably alpha move. And, I mean, how much more alpha can you get than that? But, like, you spring a surprise in the first over and then you say you've had it in the bank for 12 months. Like, cheers. Johnny Bairstow, who's obviously been an absolute ODI gun for England for, well, couple of years now.
Yeah.
He got a golden duck, and there was palpable sort of tension. England were 1-1 after two balls of their home World Cup. It's like, brilliant, they're going to be 140 all out. South's going to just chase it with their cocks out. Brilliant. And then they sort of rebuilt. And actually, I reckon that they got 3-11, I think. And then it was sort of, it looked fine. It didn't look any more than like fine. Given England's batting lineup, given Josh Butler didn't hit a boundary, that kind of stuff. It looked okay. The pitch was a bit slow. And then actually, all the credit goes to England's batsmen. Like every game they get 370, it's pretty routine. And then today they get 311. And the bowlers just turned it on. They put in their best fielding display in ages. And they showed that they're probably more than just flat track bullies today, I think. The bowlers were class. Archer, who you guys know about, he's new to the team. Plunkett took his middle over wickets, and they fielded. Ben Stokes took sort of an all-time great catch. So it was actually a sort of quite reassuring performance from England. But they don't just have one method, which is get 380 and then hope the opposition get 379, basically.
It's interesting you talk about Archer and us knowing about him. I think there's a lot of Australians only coming to the party now about England's ODI cricket generally. Otherwise, we just, you know, look at you through a 1999 prism. And just watching him on TV, he looks really quick. He lit at Amlar. He looks like an old 80s West Indian bowler in that he just sort of lopes into the crease and then wham. It comes through at absolute heat. What was it like watching him in the ground today? Did he sort of turn it on more than he had previously?
He bowled a spell against Pakistan about 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, where at the Oval as well, where he was absolute wheels. And basically all questions about whether he would be drafted into England's World Cup squad disappeared then. I think the management realised that. They rested him for a couple of games. And he's barely played for England. Like he qualified in March, and they had 7 official opportunities to play him. They only bothered to play him in 4 of them, and they made their decision at that stage. Today, what was weird was he didn't look like he was bowling. He didn't look like he was putting in, basically, and he still bowled. He bowled a 93 mph delivery to get rid of Faf, caught a fine leg, which was, you know, that's a serious alpha move to get Faf caught down there. And then he lidded Amla. That was 90 mph. And that actually, but no wickets had fallen at that stage, but it kind of did for the game. Like, I think that South Africa were a little bit spooked actually after that. We spoke to Moeen Ali afterwards. He, you know, he'd seen a bit. You'll remember Ashes series in 2017-18, where Moeen had an absolute mare at the hands of both Nathan Lyon and all of the Australian quicks. And he says he's the quickest bowler he's faced. He's just got something. It's sort of intangible. He doesn't look like he's bowling very quickly, and yet you then look at the gun and it's deep into the 90s. He's pretty special.
Well, there's obviously been some chat about England chasing 500 or scoring 500 rather at some point in this World Cup. But apparently they weren't very happy with the state of the wicket, rather that there was too much grass on this wicket. Obviously, a lot of games they played recently, they like to bang the playing wicket on one side of the square, make one boundary very short, and just make these wickets as flat as possible. But I mean, how upset were England with how much grass coverage was on the pitch?
Morgan said in his presser afterwards that he felt it was a little bit slow. I don't think they were that bothered, to be honest. Yeah. Basically, one of the reasons England's series against Pakistan recently was so high scoring is because, and this is really boring sort of jargony cricket stuff, but
cool.
Because of the World Cup, all of the wickets at the World Cup have to be right in the middle of the ground for broadcasting reasons.
Okay.
And then, so all of these grounds are hosting 3 or 4 games that they are trying to have them all on fresh pitches. And therefore, the games against Pakistan before the World Cup were on pitches which were further to one side.
Right, okay.
If that makes sense. Yeah. So there were shorter boundaries. And that meant that, like, even, you know, Pakistan, they're probably 7th or 8th best side in this World Cup, yeah. And they were getting 340 without too many issues. Yeah. So that was the games there were unbelievably high scoring. The pitches of this World Cup are probably going to be a bit flatter than they were today. Mm. But we're going to be more runs. Some I'd be amazed if someone doesn't get 500. I think England played Pakistan at Trent Bridge on Monday. Trent Bridge is a very likely ground to deliver that score, because that's where England got 4-8-1 against Australia last summer, and it's where England got 4-4-4 against Pakistan a couple of summers before that. And West Indies are playing two games there, and they are definitely a team who can get 500. So it'll be interesting to see who actually does it. But I'd be really shocked. There's 48 games in this World Cup. I'd be really surprised if 18 doesn't do it.
We'll let you get back to the Doghouse pub for another pint to toast to England's victory. Thanks for joining us. We're going to try and catch up with a couple of guys who are on the ground there in the World Cup, and appreciate you coming on, and sorry we couldn't get your off-air comment about Higos' rig being like Faf du Plessis on air today.
It was generous, wasn't it? It was generous.
Kat actually wrote a three-part fan fiction series a few years ago entitled The Choke, which looked at the fallout from the dressing room altercation between yourself and Michael Clark. And clearly this incident split the team into two lines, you know, much like Christos Tsiolkos' novel The Slap. Can I send that to you for feedback? Because I think you'll like it.
I think you've just got good feedback, haven't you?
Fan fiction.
Will McPherson there from the Evening Standard, from a pub outside the Oval where we had our book launch, our international book launch for Team No Sympathy, but also that aside, also the first match of this 2019 World Cup. It wouldn't be a great cricketer show these days without talking about ourselves in some capacity like I have just there. And we want you to come to our live shows all over the world. We've got Sydney, we've got London, we've got Melbourne, we've got Manchester, we've got Leeds, we've got Birmingham. We're going to all those cities. We're taking to the stage to do a live show. Tickets available at greycricketer.club. It's probably come about 5 years too late, but we do have our own website. You might ask why we don't have a .com. Well, that's a question for our for someone else.
That's a different story.
That's a different story that we can't get into because everything is hard in the great cricketer's life. Greycricketer.club is the place you can go to for all of those tickets, no matter where you are in the world, the UK, or Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Malaysia. We're not going to those places, but you can come to the show as well if you want to come to any of those nearest cities to you, greycricketer.club for your tickets for the live shows.
Can we just say, Higos, they are, for most UK listeners who will be listening to this on a Friday morning, they are now officially on sale, 10 a.m.
Yeah.
They go on sale. That's I know you mentioned the order before. It wasn't in the order of Sydney, then London. That'd be a lot of flying, although, you know, frequent fly points, et cetera, that'd be very good.
True.
We are heading over to the UK. Tickets are on sale. The first show's in Birmingham. Then we go north. We go to Leeds. Then we go down to Manchester. And then finally in London, the night before the Lord's Test. Very excited about sharing who the guest is for that show as well, but we can't do it just yet. You can get those tickets on sale. Greycricketer.club, click upcoming events. If that's strange for you in terms of how to get there, just type in the Grey Cricketer Live Show UK in Google. You know, it will come. It will arrive. You know, we've done the SEO on this kind of stuff. And then secondly as well, it's been great to get some emails from people who are keen to have us at their club as well in some kind of private capacity. We have a couple of dates free in London, or actually anywhere if you're willing to get us there. For the three of us to do our show to your club or your organisation or whatever, you know, CFOs with deep pockets, etc., who want material sourced after 1975, greycricketer@gmail.com.
Looking forward to us going to Malaysia in between the Manchester and Leeds gigs, most definitely. Pez, back to the cricket. We ought to talk about Ben Stokes' catch. Yeah. I mean, fucking hell, mate. What a catch that is. Yeah. I mean, you know, like often these days, like the sort of the highlight catches are the ones where the outfielder's like standing right on the boundary, sort of overbalancing, takes the catch, throws it in the air, jumps back into the field of play and then takes the catch. That to me is a very... Yeah, it's a very intelligent catch, but in the actual physicality of it is not in any way difficult. Ben Stokes' catch might be the best catch I've ever seen for, you know, for difficulty. I'm giving it a 10.0. The judges are giving it a 10.0 for difficulty. Okay. It's like it's a sweep shot. It's flat. It's coming at pace. So in terms of like picking up from the crowd, very difficult to do. Bouncing distance, he's come in from the rope. It's a sweep shot, so it has a slight curvature in the air. He backhands it like a goalkeeper tipping a ball over the crossbar, and he just absolutely fucking bare paws it. It's one of the best catches, if not the best catch I've ever seen, Sam Perry.
Wow. Yeah, and how long until somebody says, well, it should have been on the rope? Maybe it's difficult for himself.
They should have made, to be fair. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Which wouldn't be true either. It was an amazing catch. I know he's been doing some tactical training per his Red Bull ad that came out recently, which has obviously come in handy and an altogether unfair thing for me to say. It's an incredible catch, really. Yeah. I mean, the thing that blows my mind about catches like that now is, if you remember sort of back to like 1995 or whenever it was when Adam Dale took that outfield catch in the Mercantile Mutual Cup against Phil Emery, who sat next to the other day, incidentally. Let's attach ourselves to everything in professional cricket.
We should.
Like, you only have to see the absolute, like, gobsmacking bewilderment on his face. His eyes were popping out of his head that the catch was indeed taken. Whereas, like, what sort of blows my mind these days is like the amount of catches you see in the IPL or, you know, general T20 short form tournaments where the player takes the catch and it's as though they've just sort of executed a drill that they've done over and over and over. And I mean, Stokes knew it was an incredible catch, but just the sheer athleticism and like the mechanization of the body to do it, everything was in sync. It wasn't this sort of, it didn't feel like it was this kind of, he transcended himself to do it. It's just, that's just within his skill set, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's more power to the catch. It just shows how good a lot of these players are these days.
Yeah.
I should apologise too. I did say that Faf was nicked off by Jofra, and you know, Faf would hate that, being the ultimate alpha. It was Aidan Markram. Faf got caught fine leg, as Will described, also alphaed by Jofra. So just generally, I guess the point is, be afraid of Jofra.
Well, you've said the wrong thing. You should be punished accordingly. But I mean, Ben Stokes has had a remarkable game there. He's got 89 with the bat, a couple of wickets and that catch. So fair to say he was probably player of the game. And I sort of had forgotten he's even in the team, hence how good England's squad is. Gareth Southgate came in to speak to the squad. Izzy Westbury mentioned this on the last podcast we did, saying that he was brought in to sort of, give a bit of a motivational speech to this England team. And it was a bit of a confusing one because England, for the Football World Cup, were absolutely outsiders, no hopers, very young team, inexperienced, no one's really hoping for anything to happen over there. And they obviously made the semi-finals of that World Cup. And it's a very different experience for this England team, who were absolute favourites, expected to win. And if they don't, that'll probably be a fader. And it's a home final, a home World Cup. So, thoughts?
Well, yeah, the Sultan of Waistcoats has come in. I mean, I think it's a bit different in England. Like, it's not as classic as Melbourne or Victoria, where, like, all cricketers are just failed footballers. But you could tell through reading the articles that, like, the cricketers were just absolutely jazzed, you know, to see an English football manager there. And, you know, they play their pre-match football with great intensity. Apparently, Jofra's really good at that as well. But I think, how many times have I prefaced something by saying being in London last year? Too many times. But there was something about although they didn't win the tournament last year, if you understand the history of the England football team, they did transcend something last year. They broke some psychological issue they had last year when, firstly, they beat a team in a shootout in Colombia. And they just sort of took a few extra steps beyond what probably should have been expected of them. Mm. And they played with a kind of brightness and vibrancy that belied a lot of the national character, you know, the national character that says, oh, we're really good, but we're going to get knocked out in the semifinals. And there's a lot of people who are saying that. It's a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But like the sporting team seemed to be kind of representing something a little bit more hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Southgate was talking about that, about kind of breaking out of the British expectation of, you know, failure. And us, you know, again, their cricket team's doing that too, you know. What England cricket team is meant to be the coolest, the most relaxed? I know you hate kit talk, but they've got the best kit. Mm. They have guys doing tactical awareness training for Red Bull ads, so they're cool, and they got six and over. I mean, the whole thing is it's sliders. It's parallel universe shit.
Yeah,
and Aussies are still like, no. They're the old England. I'm not sure they are.
Mate, it's really interesting because, like, obviously you're talking to Will there. He was talking about how, you know, Bairstow gets a first baller. They're one for one. You know, there was raining the day before. There's still that pessimism around. But I was talking about, you know, the best team always wins. But that's even they are still thinking, like, you know, their psychological scars run so deeply, and probably rightfully so, given, you know, the history at, you know, international sporting events. Mm. But like you know, these things run so deeply that they're still thinking like, yeah, but you know, we might not play that well in the first game, and then we won't win the World Cup. No, you just got the best team.
I mean, it's a fans that's a fans' perspective, and I think that's the great thing that their sporting teams can do. They can kind of help bring them out of that. Mm. It was the same thing for their Olympics as well. I think a guy like Will, for example, he knows how good they are. And they do just kind of reflex to that. Let's just do an anthropological study of British people.
I think it's
dangerous territory. But yeah, like I think the sporting teams are separate to the public. I think the sporting teams actually play with a level of like fearlessness now that means they're an even better chance of achieving what they should achieve. He goes so much so that you know, there was news back here in Australia yesterday that. When all the World Cup captains gathered at Buckingham Palace or wherever it was to meet the Queen and Prince Harry, it was picked up that Prince Harry was sledging Aaron Finch.
Mm.
So apparently, and it was sort of picked up over a microphone where he went to meet Finch and he said to Finch, "Oh, you're getting on a bit now, aren't you? How long have you been playing?" And it made the batsman laugh, you know, and all the news items sort of, oh, he couldn't resist a dig at the Aussie. I just want to go through a few things here. So Finch is 32. Owen Morgan's 32.
Yep.
Sarfraz from Pakistan's 32. Faf's 34. Did they get sledged?
Mm.
No.
Well, my big takeaway from that is Sarfraz is 32. He looks like he's about 50.
Mm.
Whereas Faf looks like he's about 23. He's in the peak of his life.
Finch doesn't look old, though, to me. Finch actually looks quite slim these days. He's got rid of that kind of bum fluff beard as well. I mean, Finch deserved that.
Yeah, and he's attached himself to MJ Bale, you know, major sponsor, looking good in suits. I also don't think Finch has been around that long in the international circuit. I think, like, that's just a case of mistaken identity. Maybe he thought it was, like, George Bailey or something.
Maybe he thought it was Michael Clark.
Yeah.
Milky Bar kid. But do you think, like, maybe the messaging from the Palace is so tight, though, that they sort of go to a, like, a default setting of what's a casual, harmless sledge we can deliver to Australians this time. I'll just say they're old. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. I mean, you can imagine, like, how many times is Prince Harry shaking hands in a day? Would it be 100 every day? Mm. And on a bad day, 1,000?
Mm.
Yeah, and he'd have to come up with, like, some small takeaway for every single person that he has to say something to.
Mm.
And I like the idea that, I don't know if you watch the show Veep, Pez, but you know, the vice president there has a minder who whispers in the ear of the vice president anytime they meet someone, remind them who they are. I'd like to see someone like that in Prince Harry's life, just whispering over the shoulder. This is Aaron Finch, averages 45, good against the short ball, aggressive opening batsman. Oh, you're getting on a bit.
Every state player at a club should have somebody like that as well. Shall we do Ask TGC? Here goes.
Yeah, I mean, we could preview, you know, Australia to Afghanistan, but, you know, the best team always wins, and we'll probably win.
Hopefully.
There's no way that comment won't age well. And if it doesn't, I'll be playing that at the beginning of the next episode. Australia to win by 300.
Hmm.
Even though they're probably going to outspin us and out-six us or something. Mm. Okay, let's get into Ask TGC, Pez, because people need this on their commute to work in Australia, and they need it going to bed on Thursday night in the UK. Okay, this one comes in from Anonymous. Sam, and they say, "Hi, I'm a 26-year-old woman, not bad looking, with above average social skills, and am a proper cricket nuffy. I dream of shacking up with a washed up second or third grader. The thought of romantic nights watching the Ashes and him being out of the house half the weekend greatly appeals to me. How do I go about meeting and nabbing myself one of these fine specimens? Thanks." And they specifically requested to remain anonymous in case they were recognised in the workplace where I believe this podcast is listened to. So, Pez, how do we help out this 26-year-old woman, not bad looking, with above average social skills?
I don't know, man. I mean, like, when I read that and I see anonymous, I feel like it's written by a man. Like,
I can confirm that it wasn't. I can get this coming from Instagram,
okay.
And I can confirm it's a real thing.
We know a very high-profile international cricketer who used to create burner accounts to use to sledge players on the field. But anyway, so not ruling anything in or out at this point. But how do you go about meeting and nabbing one themselves? I'd imagine it wouldn't be too hard. I do like the idea of like a woman describing themselves as not bad looking.
Yeah.
I love that. I was at a clothes store yesterday just with my young son passing the time while my wife had some free time to herself. I don't know why I'm going into that detail. And
sure.
The lovely attendant at the shop was on the phone to her friend, and her friend was saying, "Oh, I want to come to your party this weekend. Is your brother going to hit on me?" And and the girl, like, you know, the sister said, "Oh, yeah, probably." And she goes, "Is he good looking?" She goes, "Nah, not really. He's just a really more Italian version of me." And I just love the idea of the sister just absolutely flaming her brother's chances, saying he's ugly, essentially. But anyway, how do you go about it? I don't know. Turn up to any pub that's close to a cricket ground after a match, I would have thought.
Yeah, I was thinking it might be that you might attach yourself as a scorer to your local team. Mm-hmm. I've seen this happen in Sydney grade spheres over the years, that there's occasionally the odd female scorer, just a young girl who's attached herself to the team. So that's surely a good way to go about meeting or shacking up with a washed up second or third grader. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best way to do it. But yeah, I mean, the correct answer is it shouldn't be that hard, given that we're all incredibly desperate and lonely.
James Carpenter writes in, "Ask TGC, sure. Gents, I have to talk to somebody about this and I think you guys are the right people. My ex-wife is heading to the UK for the Ashes and sent a message to Gideon Haig," she doesn't know him, "asking him to go and watch a couple of days of cricket at Old Trafford and or the Oval with her, as she has some spare tickets and doesn't have many friends. In her pleading message, she mentioned his History of Abortion in Australia book, I presume, and how she enjoyed his analysis and perspective of the game," these are all inverted commas, "as she is a hopeless cricket tragic, having watched 6 seasons of my husband," sick ex-husband, "playing as the overseas pro in England. She also referred to her own cricket career, 1 season, 1 wicket, 1 run, including being warned by the umpire for over-celebrating her wicket. She signs off, 'Love your work.' Should I be outraged that she's using me as proof to her tragicness to lure another man to the cricket with her? God, is she offering me in a backhanded way? Regards, James Carpenter, Roebuck Bay Cricket Club, Broome Cricket Association. P.S. She is concerned that Gideon may not respond to her invitation. I suggested she ask, perhaps ask TGC. She said she wouldn't really want to sit with any of you, except even though he goes Habs pipes, except perhaps the beta one whose name she can't remember, probably Pez."
Okay, lot going in here.
Lot going on here.
I think my big takeaway is that he's signed it off, James Carpenter, Roebuck Bay CC, Broome Cricket Association. Like, he really needs to know. He needs us to read that out. He needs the people to know who this is coming from. Could be an inside joke, this, but let's run with it. Gideon Hayes' analysis is expert. We should say that. And I should also, I mean, that does trigger a memory from watching the game last night where Sourav Ganguly, who has been paid as an expert analysis, was analysing the wicket of Johnny Bairstow last night, and he describes the first ball that he bowled to Jason Roy was a leg spinner, showed the upswing leg spinner's action. The next ball was actually a wrong'un, apparently, according to Sourav Ganguly. It was clearly a leg spinner. So that's expert analysis. So Gideon's better than Sourav Ganguly, so I'll give Gideon that. And yeah, I'm actually just upset that this person wants to sit next to Gideon and not me at a cricket game.
Oh, this is fantastic, man. I mean, we're talking about, this is ex-wife stuff here. This is bitter divorce, kind of separation, divorce territory.
Bitter.
Yeah. how James Carpenter, you know, from Roebuck Bay CC Broome Cricket Association, has come across this wife's message as well. I'm only guessing that the wife has sent it through to him, just to show him that she's inviting Gideon Haig on dates, essentially, to Old Trafford and the Oval. Yeah. Kind of say in relation to the casting of me as a beater, that you're the one getting cuckolded by Gideon Haig. Now that is a cuckolding that is shameful.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate that this has been sent through to us. Yeah, I'm not really sure what he's meant to do. I think the alpha's already been done. The fact that Gideon's been invited on these dates, he's probably going to go too. He's a bit of a groover, Gideon, I'd say. And that this has been sent to you. I think your ex-wife in this bit of divorce has gotten to you, James. I think she's gotten to you. And I think you have been comprehensively out at Alfred. That's been read out in the show.
Yeah. And he signed off with Cricket Association he plays for, so that's excellent. Appreciate
clearly
the question.
Not written by James.
yeah, I know, but let's pretend like it is.
Yeah.
All right, exiled seagull, hashtag ICGC. On paper, this England team appears to be exactly the right mix of tight, good around the group blokes and pure alphas. Sorry. I'll read that again. On paper, this England team appears to be exactly the right mix of tight, good around the group blokes and pure alphas. So what's going to go wrong and stop them winning?
I guess he goes, this points exactly to the mentality we were talking about earlier. Every single thing can be right and correct. And the history of, I guess, failure and disappointment will still loom large. So it's just about all that the rest of us have to go off, I think. It's just that, oh, no, England's a myth. No, England stuff. It's England. And that's all we have. And these things, well, they are tangible. I guess I was going to say they're intangible. But really, I mean, when I watched the wickets fall yesterday, I was like, oh, Tahir's got them with the first ball. England are rattled. Oh, you know, now Roy's kind of thrown it away. Oh, now Morgan's out. Oh, they've got a little sniff here, South Africa. Each player just came in and just picked up where they left off, you know. Still 5-6 and over.
Yep.
And on a slow wicket, as Will said, you know, they got 311. Then Joffre came out and took 3 for 27 on that slow wicket and lit a damlire in the process. So I don't know.
So what's going to go wrong? Terrorism?
Mate, I think the only thing they can't control is rain, you know, and even then climate change is...
global warming,
climate change is leaving England's summer in a beautiful sweet spot. So.
All right, should we just do one more, Pez?
Yeah, one more.
Okay, thanks for all those who have written in. There's dozens that have come in.
We'll get
to the next show. All right, this one comes in from Seb Eaton, and he says, hello, gents. If a batsman retires hurt after being struck by a ball, should the bowler not be credited with a wicket? I mean, you've literally made them stop playing the game because you hurt them so badly. Surely the most alpha of dismissals. Thoughts? Good question, Seb.
It's relevant, isn't credit? It, given what Joffre did to Hashim Anwar. Hashim,
yep.
Why, I mean, man... there's just such an alarming fixation with alphadom, isn't there?
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? How do I be? I mean, we essentially spend the whole time satirizing the alpha, or do we? You know,
I don't. But yeah.
Well, no, as your Instagram attests. But, I don't. Should the bowler get the wicket? No, because it's not a wicket, is it? You just heard somebody. It's not a wicket. So.
Yeah, I like the idea that you've literally made them stop playing the game. I like that idea of, like, doing it as a community service. I feel like when Dr. Happy came on the show, he helped a lot of people, you know, finish their careers. But I don't think he was accrediting wickets necessarily.
I guess in one way or another, he goes, you are dismissing them from the field, albeit temporarily.
Yeah.
Please leave the field now. I've affected your leaving of the field now. So do I get some credit for it? It's like a temporary wicket or something.
It's like when you tell people to stop smoking and they stop smoking and they thank you for years afterwards, even though they go through, you know, hell or something. Is there a parallel there? I'm not sure.
Have you done that before?
No, I haven't, but I read about it in the book once, the Bible. that's all the time we've got for this show. We will be doing three of these shows a week. Dave will be joining us for the main show on, when's that get released? Monday morning, Pez, is that
Monday
right?
Monday morning, Australia time.
That's right, Australia time, Sunday night, UK time. So that is going to be us. So three shows. The World Cup is here. It's here to stay for 6 weeks or so until England inevitably win the World Cup. We'll see you next time.